Hello, I'm James, and I've been a Seinfeld fan since the 90s.
Hello, I'm Steve. I watched the Seinfeld pilot when it was first shown in the UK, but it didn't click, and I walked away. Over 25 years later, I'm having another go for science.
And together we're watching the entire Seinfeld series and making our own commentary track in another Seinfeld podcast we call Hello, Newman. I should sort out all the things that I need to sort out.
Get everything lined up.
Before I start.
You've got all your noises turned off, right?
And I've got all my noises turned up to 11. I don't know. I could just do this. And I could just say hello. Welcome to episode 20.
Episode 20. My word.
20. Happy 20th, Steve.
Thank you.
Happy
20th to you. I suppose I should pay that back.
Happy 20th to you too, dear listener. Thank you for sticking with us here on Hello Newman FM.
Very nice.
Yeah. That's good. I probably missed my vacation in many ways. But there's still time for me to... I can't think of a job that's appropriately crap that doesn't sound like me punching down.
Right.
So I don't really want to demean anyone by suggesting that they have a job that only a worthless schlub like I could do.
Because the risk is that you'd think, oh, I'll make something up and someone's doing it.
Yeah, like the go-to...
And of course, they would be listening to us too, right? Mm. They'd be secret Seinfeld fans.
Quite right, yeah.
Also love listening to podcasts and just happen in some random collection of chances to hear you besmirch their living.
I don't want to offend anyone, but I was going to say like a bin man. I couldn't do that. It's too physical. And I'd be always thrown up from the smells.
Those bin trucks are grim.
Exactly. The smells you have to experience in your professional life as a waste operative.
I couldn't mention how fart-filled the cabin must be.
Oh, a lot. You imagine a lot of farts.
Mm-hmm.
Probably.
Lard against us being digested.
I don't like to bring my outside life onto this podcast, Steve, because it's very much about Seinfeld.
It breaks a spell.
But I've got a daughter, and I like to offer a fart in a plastic bag when she's hungry, and she is yet to take me up on the offer.
Is he?
Yeah. Okay, so we're going to watch. We're watching Seinfeld on Amazon, in the UK, where it is available on Prime, and we are on season 3. Episode 2, The Truth. Shall we say it now? Filmed before A Good Two Men. Filmed before A Good Few Men.
A Good Few Men.
I got it on the second take, so that's good. But you know me, I'm too lazy to edit that out, so that stays.
Fair enough.
That stays. And I am going to press play anywhere now. Now.
Now. Yeah.
Here we go.
Straight into the buttons.
Straight into the buttons. It's a good piece about the buttons as well. I like it very much. What do you make of the jacket the buttons belong to, though, Steve?
That's my response.
Yeah. It looks like it's been pressed up against a chalkboard that's done like a maths book.
Honestly, though, you could swap the texture of the jacket to the texture of the backdrop behind him and it would make no difference.
Maybe he's such a well-evolved stand-up comedian. He's actually developing a camouflage. And he's developing a coat that blends in with the background. You watch, it looked like some red drapes. Next. Classic setup in Monk's, but it's George and a lady with chopsticks in her hair. What could be more 90s, Steve, than explicit cultural appropriation?
Although I have to say, I would have given my left arm to have a girlfriend who dressed like that back then.
At the time?
Yeah.
Even with chopsticks?
Yes, I would have been an absolute sucker for it.
Oh, dear.
But it's very clear, very, very quickly, that she is a pretentious date.
Oh, terrible. She's not even a date, is she? She's a girlfriend at this point.
True.
I love that we didn't see the episode where George met this lady and managed to form an embryonic relationship with her to the point where it's not her that wants done with George. she looks very much like an extra character from Tintin the Blue Lotus. It's not a good look. But Jerry's being audited by the IRS.
Yes.
Because Kramer convinced him to sign up to a charity that was entirely bogus.
Was it Kramer's own charity?
I don't know. We never find out. I can't help but feeling that Bob Sacramento might have been involved at some point.
I see.
Almost certainly. The girlfriend character. I want to get this done because
okay,
I'm not
going to
be
sure, why not?
Thinking about it. It's played by a actress called Valerie Mahaffey, who has been in a ton of things. Still working today. Most recently in The Man in High Castle. But very recognisable face.
Oh, yes.
She's like so many of the characters you see here. She's been in everything over the last sort of 20 years. We're setting up the fact that Kramer's dating the roommate of
Tina.
Elaine, Tina. And it'd be a strained sauce through a strainer. I don't understand this straining sauce.
He's got his methods.
It's odd, because surely the sauce is the bit that you're straining out, isn't it? Like what he's going to...
The sauce is the product of straining, which someone has probably already done on your behalf, yeah, depending how you got the sauce in the first place.
Because like, at the point where he strains sauce through the spaghetti, what he's going to be left with is the bits from the sauce. The sauce is what he's going to have strained away.
Depends what he strains the sauce into.
That is very true. If he strains it into a receptacle that then gets used to put back on it when he... Who knows?
Mm.
This is the story they should have focused on for me. Good Star Wars reference there?
Oh, I missed it.
He's talking about their relationship, which was a long time ago in a galaxy far, far away.
Very good.
Therefore not referring to the thing that we won't refer to.
I have no idea what you're even talking about.
It was a Krakatoan disaster relief fund that never happened.
It's interesting that Elaine has such a memory for one of their early dates when Kramer turned up and asked for a charitable donation.
You imagine, though, that Kramer's... It's going to be one of the first times she met Kramer. He's going to leave an impression, though, isn't he?
Yes. Could he not?
Yeah. Jerry's very laid back about the audit, though, because of a convergence of storylines.
Yes.
Mm.
It's interesting that the story converges after, and isn't the thing that happens first, and then George and his girlfriend come after that, but they actually come before, which is a nice touch. Especially when in the first scene she's talking about things that she's passionate about that earn no money.
Yeah.
Yet she's an accountant,
yeah,
so she's very aware of the value of things.
Yeah, absolutely. But when she's presented to you as well, your first thought when you meet this character is not that she's an accountant. It's like, oh, well, she must be an artist.
Yes.
Which builds an extra level of pretentiousness
mm-hmm.
into the character as well, which is fantastic. She's fully loathsome right from minute one. It's brilliant.
She doesn't strike me as loathsome immediately. She strikes me as an incredibly poor match for George. Like, this thing is never going to work anyway.
I love that. I love that that line. We spoke about it a moment ago, Steve, before we started recording. When she says, "Don't you like my chopsticks?" and he says,
"Professor Fork."
Brilliant.
Yeah.
Of course. So George says, she presses George for the truth. And he says, "The truth? You want the truth?" This was recorded 1 year later. 1 year later. He could not have said those words without saying, You can't handle the truth.
Yeah.
And that, ladies and gentlemen, was the world that we lived in before A Good Few Men.
Yeah, two good men.
Two good men.
Two good men, the movie.
I'm on a podcast called that. Look it up.
But this is actually one of the few times, if not the only time that I've seen so far, where George has actually told the truth.
Yeah. Yeah.
He's not withheld himself from it because he was almost invited to do it. It wasn't the onus wasn't on him to deliver it in the end. He was invited to do it, so it was easier for him to just spill it out. And boy, did he.
Yeah.
And boy, did everyone else and Monks know.
Yeah. And I think actually that's a character trait in George that actually does grow. is that dam's broken now. It's almost like for his character, I think this is a dam. And tell it, although no, that's not true. He told his boss the truth, didn't he, in The Revenge?
Mm.
Flew off the handle. So it's already in George's arsenal, as twere. It's worth, if you're watching along with us,
mm-hmm.
please keep your eyes peeled on Michael Richards, because he does some beautifully subtle but really funny work here.
Well, there was already the thing right at the beginning of the scene where the buzzer goes off and Kramer gets up to answer it as Jerry's on his way.
Oh, that's, like,
that was nice.
Mm.
It just gives it gives the scene more life.
He works so hard. It's, can't imagine anyone else playing this.
No.
Oh, dear.
See, it's a poor strategy to kind of be halfway through something you're doing for a friend.
Here he goes. Brilliant. Well, Jerry's looking the other way as well. All happens while Jerry's got his back turned. It's brilliantly timed. Although, you notice on Jerry Seinfeld's face, he's going.
He's having to work hard to hold the corpsing in.
Sorry, I spoke.
There's a couple of times where that happens in this episode, actually.
I feel like I not only...
There wasn't much more to say. It was just like, it's a poor strategy on George's part to be doing something on Jerry's behalf and then kind of, like, kill it. But he can't help himself.
Did you notice that in my keenness to apologise for talking over you, I kept talking over you? Did you notice that? What about you, listener? Did you catch that?
I was trying to work around it.
I'm a professional. I know what I'm doing.
Mm.
Brilliant.
Oh, this is,
The Elaine George truth off. He's brilliant, though. This is a wonderful.
But George is a man who can't handle the truth.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Who can? I can see so much of myself in George, which I find terrifying.
She's extremely careful delivering that to him.
She is very careful.
Picked her words. She but he knows exactly. Because he knows.
Mm.
He knows that he's tight. He knows that he's spendthrift. He doesn't want to admit it to anybody. Yeah.
The physicality of the cast in this episode is brilliant. It feels like it's got a ton of energy, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah.
Mm. Keep noticing, see how Jerry's hair sort of flicks up at the back there. I used to have a mullet. In the 80s, my hair used to exactly the same thing, get all flicky at the back.
It's horrible.
I'm not very comfortable how Jerry Seinfeld has his equalizer set on his MIDI system.
Oh, I hadn't been looking.
Yeah, he's got sort of mid-range bass high up, never everything else on the bottom. Everyone knows the best was the lopsided smile with the high side of the smile being on the bass.
Mm, okay. I always prefer the flat response.
Oh, right. I always liked the smile. Or slanted smile. Really, you liked it flat, did you?
I don't like losing the top end.
I used to listen to a lot of dance music, though, when I had a graphic equalizer.
Mm-hmm.
It's all about the bass. I don't want no treble.
So Patrice didn't go back to work.
She didn't.
What's interesting is she goes to work dressed the way she's dressed.
Yeah.
That's New a York. Lively accountancy firm.
Yeah, it's New York in the 90s. Oh, we all know a kooky accountant.
Oh, yeah. This is something worth pointing out, actually.
Mm.
As George moves from the phone to make his way out of the apartment, there's a little bit of white tape on the floor.
Ah, marks.
Yeah, a little mark. Which isn't there earlier on in the scene. So obviously, but it's where George stands when he first comes into the apartment.
Isn't that interesting? I'm not very sure.
So obviously, they've done some retakes and whatever, but they've gone to this white shot after they've done a couple of retakes and the tape is still on the floor. That's a little nerd corner. We'll have another corner. Apple corner and then like nerd corner. Two corners.
We've got sartorial corner too.
Sartorial, got three corners.
We have got
this
three.
This podcast has got three corners.
Three corners to my podcast. So Kramer's found a perfect piece of windscreen glass in the street.
A stray windshield.
That wasn't a stray, was it? Someone had propped it up somewhere while they went to do something else. Elaine, her physicality, this is what I was talking about, is just amazing in this. Her disgust at what at the situation she's found herself in is, we've all felt that unclean. and she expresses it perfectly.
So why would Kramer? It was obviously going to treat this as a private matter.
Actually, do you know, funny you should say that. I was thinking about, in terms of Kramer as a character, Kramer doesn't tell Jerry everything at all, does he? If that's George and Jerry, they tell each other immediately.
Yeah.
But Kramer keeps it to himself because he is a gentleman.
Mm-hmm.
And he saw.
Yeah, I mean, he brought her the bench.
Something actually, if you're rewatching this show, I should have brought it up earlier. Sandra, girlfriend? No, yeah, Sandra, isn't it, the girlfriend?
In this episode?
Yeah.
George's girlfriend?
Yeah.
Patrice?
Yeah, of course. Sandra, Patrice. She puts something in her bag as they leave the diner. I'm sure it's salt. Now, she refers later to having put Jerry's papers in her pocketbook.
Mm.
Looks a lot like a handbag to me, but it's a pocketbook. Pocketbook.
I'm going to let that one go.
But it looks awfully like she puts, you know, the sugar shakers.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure she puts 2 sugar shakers in her bag.
Never noticed.
I mean, there's no way to go back and check now. Because we're rolling and that's how we roll.
This is it. Life to take, baby.
Yeah, absolutely. It's almost like the person putting this together is a lazy editor.
George right. here returning from the set of Play School.
Steve, come and join me in Sartorial Corner. Why is George dressed up like a hot dog?
Is he still out of work? Here?
Yes. But
because he looks like he's come from a lunch shift at a fast food joint.
Talking of which, we might as well stay in Sartorial Corner. That tie as well, though, he's just... The only thing he's got going on for him is the shirt. I can't even believe in 1991 that was all right, that jacket.
It's very entertainment. There's no other situation in which that would really work. Unless you were selling cars.
Exactly.
Used ones.
Used cars, not new cars. If you're selling new cars, you'd be able to afford both parts of the suit.
That's true. It would be a prerequisite.
Yeah. You know, it's actually... We're getting shots and better quality shots of the crowd.
Yes.
During the stand-up. It looks a lot better filmed. Although we haven't had many soft focuses yet, have we?
No, it's not been too bad, actually.
No. So he sent her to a mental institution or a depression clinic.
Yeah, which are two very different things.
But I think so.
George would... explode these things into something way more serious and then put all the guilt of that on himself.
A little more of George's... Bob Sacramento, another mention of Kramer's mysterious friend, mm-hmm. Bob Sacramento, who went to a mental institution. One of the few Seinfeld stories where actually I genuinely see it from Jerry's point of view. He has a good reason to be quite frantic about getting this stuff back.
Sure.
Whereas often it's, you know, you'd want them to, you'd think, well, a normal person would let this go. Totally understand. Jerry, I think, is entirely justified in desperately wanting these papers back. And I like the way as well that if the character was slightly different in this, this wouldn't seem so funny. But she's clearly gone there. It's almost like the way mental health maybe was discussed in the early 90s, that for some people it was an indulgence.
Yeah.
Very clearly for this character, her trip to the mental health, the depression clinic, is...
a pretension.
Yeah. It's all part of this character she's already established of being a completely loathsome hipster dickhead.
And there she is.
Yeah, although she looks much less irritating without the chopsticks in her hair.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, nice. Jungle music.
That's right. It's a jungle in there, baby. It is. It really is.
Yeah, and it looks like someone's been messily catering for about 500 people.
Mm-hmm. I wouldn't be surprised if Kramer had been straining the sauce elsewhere.
Well, it sounds like that's what he's doing now. Here he comes in a towel. He's another very sexy man. I don't think I'd want to come home to see Kramer dancing naked in a in a town. Well, it does kind of make me respect Kramer less, though, because it's Elaine's flatmate. And she's kind of skeevy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Ow.
She's another one who's been working regularly up to the present day.
I should hope so. She's good in this.
She is. We were I having a look at her IMDb. I sometimes look at IMDb before this because, you know, I like to have things to say. But she's called Siobhan Hogan. Or Siobhan Hogan. And it's not even in her known fours. Forrest Gump, Men in Black. Good films.
Sure.
Good films.
Successful films.
She's been in good stuff. She's done good work.
Incredibly patronising, the two of them here.
Well, I don't know. I mean it's sincere. Oh, you mean him?
Yeah. Jerry and George.
I love the way they talk to her.
Yeah.
George is right, though, isn't he? And the thing is, again, this is one of those few situations. George is right, though. She's a dreadful, pretentious idiot. Someone actually probably needs to tell her. Reveals herself there as well. You're just trying to take it back because you're guilty while I'm in there.
Mm-hmm.
Why would you say that? Why would you say that? Why would that even be on your mind? I like the staff that come over when they raise their voices and give them disgusted looks.
Yeah.
You'd think they'd say something, wouldn't you?
Not necessarily, because if it's the kind of place where people self-refer at a great expense for a weekend, the staff probably don't need to do much more than embarrass you out of whatever situation you're in right
now. That's probably true. I've got these
Have another go.
Hold on, I'm going to take a little bit of a run up this time.
Yeah, do it.
Sophisticated New York types.
Yes.
Oh, blimey, I nailed that one.
Jerome.
Again, underlining George's point.
Mm-hmm.
Of course she would throw out all the papers. But she's happy to help him. She just needs the copies of all the receipts going back for the last 6, 7, 8 years. I mean, think about it from the perspective of living in now. He has to get receipts going back to the 80s.
It's incredible.
Yeah, I'm not sure that's...
Probably not true.
No.
But a good few years.
They make a really gross couple.
I quite like the coffee table. No doubt there's a decent fit there between the two of them. They're a good match.
Yeah.
But my word, I wouldn't want to be around it.
No. I thought the coffee table he made was
past
nice.
Tense. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, who would have thought that invisible coffee table broke? They knew. He's trying to get a receipt for a computer he bought. Now, what would he been buying in 1987 if he liked Apple? Welcome to Apple Corner, everyone. Steve, what do we think? 87? He's buying an Apple Macintosh. What do we think he'd have been buying in 87?
Well, you see, now I'm in a situation where I have to go through my old notes to find where I had initially put the information in the particular computer he got.
I'm sorry, I don't like to put my guests on the spot here in Apple Corner. But I'm afraid I'm going to have to press you for the figures, Mr. Steve.
So I see you're
opening your iPad.
I've gone back to my notes. Yeah, if you could just give me a moment, I'll get you the exact figures.
Oh, this is the problem with you, Mr. Steve. You never have the figures to hand.
Well, it's the Macintosh Special Edition.
Yes.
It was discontinued in October 1990. I think it had been kicking around probably from 87 or 88.
He may well
have bought it from new.
Yeah.
Had he bought it from new, and given the model he had, he would have spent $3,900.
And that's all we've got time for in this week's Apple Corner. Thanks for joining us, Steve, and thanks for listening, everyone.
Strong and stable figures.
So, Kramer returns and he is incapacitated. Yeah.
It would seem that that coffee table was indeed a bit... Mm-hmm. I mean, I can't... First of all, just the concept of turning a windshield into a coffee table. Like, it's a coffee table that you're going to want to put things on, right? You might put a bottle of wine, a couple of glasses, maybe a few picture books or... you know, some copies of Time magazine that you haven't quite finished.
Yeah.
You're already expecting it to withstand an awful lot of weight. And I wouldn't for a million years expect it to hold any of that up.
No. Did you get a good view of it though? He actually used breeze blocks as the legs, so it was completely clear, which is breeze blocks holding it up.
Mm-hmm.
Classy table. So that was season 3, episode 2, The Truth. Steve, your thoughts?
Hello. Hey, this was the first episode for a while where our main characters, our group of friends, were being jerks to each other.
Yes.
For a while, it's kind of, they've been relatively tight, and it's the rest of the world they have a problem with. Whereas this time, they're all still, you know, friends. They surf around each other because that's the way it is.
Yeah.
But they're all a little bit snippy and snipey with each other.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, not just in terms of delivering the truth, but in the expectations they have of each other as well.
Two external protagonists, both of whom are loathsome as well.
Yeah, you see, I didn't take Patrice to be particularly loathsome at the beginning, but it was. I didn't read that straight away. Yeah. It's just like, okay, yes, a pretentious arty type, but potentially nothing else all that wrong with him. And it wasn't really until a lot later where she's at Woodhaven and she's got the arms folded and she knows she's in a position of power and she's kind of like playing on George's guilt and stuff like that. But yes, I start to notice that she's as bad as the rest of them.
Yeah.
I feel uncomfortable, you know, casting anybody out as loathsome. We all have our foibles and quirks, but yes, they are all... They are all equals.
It depends where your early 90s biases are.
I guess so.
I was a certain sort of person in the early 90s. Did not like the...
You would not have entertained those people.
No. The person she was presenting as would have been exactly the sort of person that myself and my little circle of friends would not have liked particularly. I suspect... I could be wrong. I could be doing like 16, 17... 17-year-old me a disservice.
Right.
That is a little sodden.
Okay, great. So, yes, in terms of what the characters were doing with each other, certainly been a while since we've done that, and it feels like the kind of thing that Seinfeld as a show will continue to do. You know, will they be sniping out, but they will be sniping within.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the early part of this series as well, stories are really heavily focused on Jerry. And actually the other three don't have that much to do.
Which is really interesting compared to what we've had so far, where Jerry is... often a passive observer.
Yeah, I don't know.
Or at most might be goading one of the other characters into doing something because, you know, he'll gleefully get more material out of it.
I know the network wanted more of Jerry, and it was one of the critiques they made of the show in series 2.
Sure.
So whether, I don't know this for sure, but whether there was a conscious decision at the start of this season to make it more Jerry-centric to start with, I don't know. When we come to talk about our next episode, I think that kind of comes to a head, but we'll talk about that when we get there. This episode is significant because it is the first Seinfeld episode written by a woman.
Yes, I was going to bring that up, actually. Yeah.
Written by Elaine Pope.
So this, I mean, are we in a situation here where, I mean, this is outside of Jerry and the two... Larry's working on it. Are we looking at a larger writing team?
Absolutely, by necessity, a 22 season show needs more writers. I know the writing process was you pitched ideas, then you wrote them, and then they were given to Seinfeld and David, who would then rewrite it. So everything came through their filter. On the final edit.
Okay.
So writers would go off and write the show, and then Larry Seinfeld and Jerry David would then do the final edit and rewrite. Yep. So it always came through that filter. Don't think that's so much the case in the final two seasons where there's no Larry David. Don't know whether Jerry Seinfeld did the final edit and everything. I'm not sure.
Oh, okay.
But obviously,
we can revisit that later.
He was the showrunner.
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll come to that bridge when we eventually cross it.
Mm-hmm.
Great episode, though. Very funny.
Broader.
Yeah, yeah.
Broader. A lot of that actually rests on Kramer, the Kramer Tina thing.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not the only thing.
Yeah.
But it's significant in how it's played compared to what else that we see. And again, Kramer's physicality gets a bit of an airing. Which is always great.
That little dance little dance of disgust, it just makes me so happy. It's brilliant. Great episode.
Fun.
Yeah, and atypical. Good Seinfeld.
And more importantly, we're back to the original theme music.
Yes.
What a relief.
That's done. We will never hear. Is it a beat? Hey. Again. Well, until we next watch that episode of Seinfeld, which I'm sure I will again, whether you will or not, I don't know. Is there anything else you'd like to add on the episode we've just watched, which is Season 3, Episode 2, The Truth?
No further questions, Your Honour.
Okay, well, if those are your closing remarks, I can only find us guilty of podcasting in the third degree. Thank you for listening. We very much appreciate it, and we hope you'll listen again. There's nothing else to say, is there? Bye-bye.
See you later.